This podcast is made possible by the patrons at patreon.com. To support the show, visit patreon.com/Keith Bergun. Hello and welcome to the Clockwork Game Design Podcast. I'm your host, Keith Bergun. This is episode 29. We're going to be talking about... This is kind of, I guess, like a personal episode. I'm just going to be talking a lot about my life with video games and... what I'm thinking and feeling about video games right now and going forward, what I intend to do or think about how I intend to think about it. But I wanted to let people know kind of where I'm coming from, my background, my history, and how I think it translates into a way of looking at video games or games in general. So I wanted to start just sort of from the beginning. I've been playing video games my whole life, and I mean like since I was like 3 years old. My parents were pretty cool about me playing video games. So from when I was 3 years old, I remember I lived in London at that time, and I got an Atari. In fact, I think it's possible that my dad had this Atari 2600 before I maybe was even born, but either way, I had it very, very early, and I remember playing a lot of games. Adventure comes to mind on the Atari. Then later on in life, I got an NES. You know, I went through the whole thing. By the Super Nintendo, the 16-bit era, I remember all I wanted, there was this one Christmas, and I wanted my parents to get me a Super Nintendo really badly, and I also got my grandparents, I like lucked out and got them to get me a Genesis at the same time. So I remember this one, it was a Christmas, and this one Christmas I got a Super Nintendo and a Genesis at the same time. Not a lot of my friends, there was, you know, the console war things were big back then. But it gave me a weird perspective, I feel like, to be able to see, to be able to have, like, I like Super Nintendo and Genesis. It's like, you know, I like the Yankees and the Red Sox or something. It had put me in this weird position where I could kind of just look at games kind of as games rather than, like, this weird tribal thing, this tribal signifier. So that was an interesting experience for me, was the Super Nintendo and Genesis time. I also, at that time, was when I sort of started developing these, like, sort of monogamous relationships with games, where, you know, I would find one game that I really, really liked a lot, and I would play the hell out of it for like a year or 2 years and just really, really play it, maybe even more than that. So a big one for me was the original Super Mario Kart, playing that multiplayer competitively. I got very serious about that, and actually I played that for like 10 years at least, until in my 20s I was still playing that. But also Street Fighter 2, played a ton of that. And a ton of Mortal Kombat, which I got super obsessed with, which also has sort of tendrils in the other conversation about violence glorification. So by 1993, I had actually, like, over time, being completely obsessed with video games, had, like, amassed a pretty good library of... You know, I still had my Atari, my NES, my Super Nintendo, Genesis. I had definitely a Game Boy. I had a Game Gear. I'm trying to think. I probably had some other stuff, but I had, like, all these games. And then this thing called the Panasonic 3DO came out. And most people probably don't even remember what that is, but it was this 32-bit system with, like, a CD-ROM, like, was the media. And it was, like... It was like trying to be sort of like this revolutionary thing, you know, trying to be like this media center, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the graphics were like the next sort of generation beyond Super Nintendo. And a friend of mine actually had a 3DO, and I played a few games, and from playing them at his house, they seemed like just amazing. In fact, there was two games by Crystal Dynamics, who were the company that went on later to create Tomb Raider. But they made a game called Crash and Burn, which was like a racing game, kind of like, actually not that unlike Mario Kart, in that it was like a racing game with like combat elements. And I just thought that was the coolest thing in the whole world. And I recommend looking that one up. It's kind of funny. And then another one called Total Eclipse, which was like Star Fox, but a little more open and like more real 3D and better graphics, basically. But other than that, it was totally Star Fox. And I just got super obsessed with 3DO and really just, it was like this crazy sickness. Now, here's the thing about 3DO. The system cost $700 when it was released. So I couldn't afford that at all, and no one was going to buy that for me. So I had a tag sale, and I sold like all my video games, which is like crazy. I think I kept like a few of my favorite NES games, but I sold like the vast majority of my stuff to get a 3DO. And that's what I did. So I got a 3DO. Oh, another game in the Genesis era that I was like one of those like sort of almost monogamous games, by the way, when this relates to the 3DO, was the old John Madden football. I think it was 92, which if I'm remembering correctly, was either the second game in the series or the third. I think it was like 90 was the first one, then there was 91. And the first John Madden football was just called John Madden football. It didn't have a year attached. So that might have been 91 or 90, I don't remember. But either way, I played 92 a lot. And now that's funny because one of the games I ended up really playing a lot on 3DO was the Madden football game on there, which I don't think had a year either. I think it was just called John Madden Football. But it was like, you know, it would have been like the 94 or 95, whatever, stats. You know, so the games that I had been super hyped about, like, actually weren't all that great. And the games I ended up playing a ton of were, I played a lot of Need for Speed, the original, because like there was car physics that you could play with, and John Madden Football, which is like, I was like, I could just be playing the Genesis one. It's like basically the same thing. Anyway, that happened for a while. Those were pretty much it. Like those four games I listed for 3DO, that's pretty much all I played. And Need for Speed, by the way, was not 3DO exclusive. John Madden Football was not 3DO exclusive. Oh, I also played Road Rash, the 3DO Road Rash, which also was not an exclusive. I believe it was on PC and would come later on PlayStation. So the games I really liked the most weren't even exclusive. And even if they technically were exclusive, there were just super similar experiences that could be had on the previous generation's, systems. So within a year, and maybe even within 6 months, I got to look this up, but it was not a long time, the 3DO was dead. Meaning, like, you would go into, at that time, Babbage's or Electronics Boutique. They would be selling 3DOs for $50. Like, no joke. I can still remember in my eye, in like my mind's eye, seeing this beaten up box of a 3DO, which must have been returned 20 times to Babbage's via their really too good for customers and abusable return system, or return policy, I should say. And seeing this $50, like, you know, supermarket, like, stamped on price tag. And that was when it really just hit me that I was like, okay, this system is dead. They're not going to be continuing to make games for it. I, like, fell for the biggest, like, hype trap ever. It was like a totally formative experience for me with video games and with consumerism in general, and, like, you know, how that kind of stuff can enrapture you. And it was good because I was like, you know, 11 years old or 12 years old at the time. And I feel like I really got a very harsh lesson on that, you know, like later in life, seeing people buy stuff, like I was immune to that kind of stuff later on in life when other people were not. So around that same time, I was starting to get into computers. I got Doom. And I got into building computers. I really wanted to play Doom Deathmatch, and I really wanted to build Doom levels and then test the Doom Deathmatch levels out in a two-player competitive, you know, Deathmatch environment and then like iterate and stuff. And that's what I ended up doing. The way I ended up doing it was just by like getting pieces, like buying like a sound card from this guy. And I remember there was this like hand-me-down gateway computer that had gone through like three or four of my friends' hands before it finally came to me. Yeah, it was like this giant, you know, one of those, like it was a 486. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was originally a 386, but we upgraded it to a 486, or like one of my friends did, and then I upgraded it to a Pentium at some point as well, I believe. Anyway, it was one of those, like, you know how most desktops go upright? This was one of those, like, sideways ones from the old days. It had, like, when I got it, it had a 5 1/4 floppy drive on it, I believe. When I first got it, no, now I remember. When I first got it, it was a 386, and 386s can just barely run Doom. And so we had to play, we did use it for Doom testing, but we had to play it in like a, you know, low res and on a tiny, like you could make the screen smaller and bigger to kind of like optimize it for worse systems. And so we would do that. But I, you know, I hooked these two computers, my family computer that was my family's, and this other little like thing that we cobbled together, and we hooked them up by a null serial modem and played deathmatch every day. Me and another friend of mine who's a game developer now, and yeah, we would just play. I mean, that was a huge formative experience for me in terms of, you know, becoming a game developer. I mean, that was really. I spent a good couple years just every day playing Doom for hours, and then at night working on new maps, tweaking maps, making notes from the day's playtesting. And it was really just like this iterative process, and I didn't think of it as game development at the time, but it's totally what it was. And so I was like super, during that time, just super Doom monogamous during that time. And then, you know, of course, Quake and all the first person shooters that came after it, I played all those. Was big into Counter-Strike once that was a little bit later. StarCraft also came out a little later. I mean, I was into Warcraft 2. I actually played Warcraft 2 on Kali. I don't know if anyone remembers what that is, but that was this before Battle.net. If you wanted to play online, it was just this kind of like, I think M Player was another one that I dabbled with. I played M Player to play Duke Nukem 3D online. But anyway, Kali, I would play Warcraft 2 on Kali, and then StarCraft came out. I also played Diablo, of course. Had a Diablo phase. Was pretty happy with my Diablo 1 phase. It was Diablo 2 where I started picking up on, oh wait, this is just like, I didn't know what like Skinner boxes were or anything like that, but I could see that it was just getting me in this compulsive loop, and that I was not really getting any value out of it. So I quit Diablo 2 pretty quick in, and then I've never played anything else like that since, except for times where I explicitly am like guinea pigging myself to like to research something, whatever. So StarCraft, that was a big one. Played a lot of that in like, you know, early high school. And then Warcraft 3 was insane. I played Warcraft 3 from the time it came out in 2002 to about 2008, and very, very seriously that whole time. Only one-on-ones, that's all I ever played. Only ladder matches. I remember on my account, something like 5,000 or 6,000 ladder matches on my profile. Now, I only played like 2 or 3 games a day, but it was like every single day I would play. And I also would make maps. I was into commentaries. I made my own commentaries. I always was watching replays if I wasn't playing, talking about the game. And that's a big thing that, you know, I've been dealing with recently is like, how do you make a game that people can talk about? And I think that asymmetry and those kind of things have a lot to do with that. Talking about Warcraft 3 was some of the most fun I've had with video games. Just sitting there and like kind of musing about, oh, but if he goes for this, then you just get this and this and this, and you know, you counter it that way. Or I love doing this strategy because you do XYZ and whatever. So it's very good to talk about Warcraft 3. And so I played that for 6 years, and those were like my college years, really. And I just really did not apply myself to college. And this goes into another theme that I'm going to get back into in a bit. But, you know, through high school, I really didn't apply myself to high school because my real high school was Doom or was StarCraft. Or actually, I completely forgot all about Ultima Online, the first big graphical MMO. Which, you know, I to this day, I still think was more ambitious than most MMOs. And man, for a 16-year-old, 15-year-old, it was just like mind-blowing. So I played the hell out of UO in the beta and the first couple of years that it was out. 2002 to 2008, played so much Warcraft 3. Then TF2 came out. I did the same thing with that. I was extremely serious. I had a clan. We tried to get our clan. Like, we were, like, just below, like, pro level. Like, we were, like, you know, at the level where we could play actual, what do they call them, scrimmages with other clans. I forget the terminology now, but we had our own server. We were, like, we would play all the time and just, you know, pretty much were as serious as you could be without being an actual, like, pro. So, and yeah, I think, I forget how many hours I have logged into TF2. It's on my Steam account, something like 500 hours or somewhere in that ballpark. It's a lot of time, let's just put it that way. And then, you know, so that ended in like 2012 or so, something like that. And then there was the board game era, which was like 2010 is really when I discovered board games, and which I'm sad to say is too late. I mean, I should have discovered them earlier. In fact, I wish I had discovered them back in the 90s, but like there was just not really a channel for me to do that. So once I found out about board games, that was just mind-blowing, and totally, I intensely, for like 2 or 3 years, from about 2010 to 2013, just like researched, made it like my job to research the hell out of board games. And what that meant was I first bought like 5 or 6 of them, and then started trading them. And if I have my Board Game Geek trades, and it's just like, I've made, I think, I don't know, 50, 100 trades over the years. And then also on top of that, I was selling games, buying them back, and like, you know, just constantly new games are coming in and going out. And so even though now my collection probably only has like, I don't know, 30 or 40 games in it, like I've played a good 200 games during that time. And like seriously played, you know, I would have like weekly meetings where I'd get a bunch of people over, and it was just a very intense board game time. And that's where, I mean, I learned so much about game design from board games, which I, again, will get back into. And then in 2014, I started playing League of Legends, and that's the game that I play now. In the last 5 years, there's also been like a little bit of iPhone games, but most of the iPhone games are actually just digital board games. Yeah, that's pretty much my history. I mean, I'm leaving out chunks and things here and there. I mean, I played the hell out of RPGs, and I like the PC RPGs. I played all kinds of stuff. Like, oh, I had a giant Abandonware era where I was just obsessed with Home of the Underdogs, and I've probably read every page that they had on Home of the Underdogs, and I've downloaded probably like, I don't know, a third of their games and just played them. Oh, another big formative experience was in the early 2000s, I also worked at Funko Land. I don't know if you remember what Funko Land was, but it was an old, like, retro game store where you could buy old games and sell your old games. Well, that, I started working there at the time when they were transitioning. They got bought by GameStop. That's why they don't exist anymore. It was getting transitioned to becoming a GameStop. So during that time, actually, I sort of recovered my video game collection that I had lost in the great 3DO debacle of 93. Because what would happen was I'd be at the counter, people would come in with giant bags full of old video game stuff, and GameStop doesn't buy that stuff. So they'd be like, hey, do you want all this stuff? And I'm like, oh, sorry, we don't buy that anymore, but I'll buy it from you for like, you know, and that was, my manager was fine with it. I don't know if that's probably not company like legal, but my manager was fine with it at the time. So I'd be like, I'll give you like $1 for that Game Boy or that whatever that game is. And I got all kinds of weird, rare stuff video game stuff through that process. And I dabbled. I almost became like a video game collector type person in that time. Definitely could have. If I had a little more of that inclination, I would have at that time. So, but anyway, that was also a very informative thing for me, was being on the sort of commercial end and trying to sell people video games and just seeing the way that people buy games and hearing the questions they ask when they come into those stores and just seeing what their priorities are and stuff. And I mean, I remember like just one story I can tell about that was, so at the time the new Final Fantasy was Final Fantasy X, and it was, you know, $60 or whatever. And we also had like, you know, tons of copies of Final Fantasy VII, which I at the time was a massive fan of. And it was like, I don't know, $15, because it was the greatest hits version, which are 20 new. And then it was like used copies. So it was like, you know, $12, $13, $14. It was very cheap, and we had tons of copies of it. And somebody would come in and they'd be like, hey, I'm looking for like an RPG. I've heard about Final Fantasy. It sounds really cool. So what do you think of like Final Fantasy X? Is it good? I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, it's whatever. But you should I started hyping up Final Fantasy VII to them. And I was like, VII is, I mean, people have mixed feelings about X. Some people really like it. Some people are not crazy about it, but VII is like the most beloved game. It's, you know, it basically put RPGs on the mainstream map of video games in the world. And actually, I think Final Fantasy purists, a lot of them like VI better. I would probably put myself in that camp too, but that's beside the point. The point is, VII is this like super beloved game that if you like RPGs and, you know, JRPGs, you should probably like Final Fantasy VII. I think that's pretty uncontroversial. And it's $14. And this fucking other thing is like not $60. And what was interesting though was the guy, obviously, in case you didn't predict it, went for Final Fantasy X. And the reason is it's new. And I think part of the reason is it's a way to spend money. It feels good to spend money. And there's this like sort of mystical newness to things. And there's a social thing, like, oh, I'm playing the new game that everyone else is playing right now. I'm not playing something that people were playing 10 years ago. So, you know, some of that is reasonable. Some of it's like not super reasonable, I think. Either way, it's it is a phenomenon that I think video games really like live off of. So anyway, that is now a more complete telling of my lifetime of video games. There's still huge things that I'm not going into, but I'm not going to bring them up right now. So what I wanted to talk about with this podcast really was just some feelings of, I don't know, like I kind of regret spending so much time playing games, and particularly the time I spent after, like, if you look at that timeline, basically after the Doom era. Like, if I had just stopped, or like, maybe not stopped, but dramatically cut back my video game playing from after, like, I would say 1995, 96 to now, and reduced it, like made it whatever it is now, cut it down by like 70-80%, I think I would just be a much better human being right now. Like I would now, that might sound like a crazy claim, I think, not because I'm like this amazing person, but because maybe the answer is, like, I think it's easy to say like, well, people always need some pastime and some time waster thing, and, you know, no one makes optimal use of their time, etc. And that's, you know, maybe that's true to some extent, but for me, I've been noticing recently that that some of my video game playing wasn't necessarily a pastime. It wasn't necessarily because I wanted to play the games. Part of it was like an identity thing. Like I am a person who plays video games. What is the video game that I will be playing now? And, you know, because I had always been that person partially, so it was habit, but it was also partially like, you know, an identity projection kind of thing, I think. So like in the Warcraft 3 days, or in the TF2 days, maybe even recently with League of Legends, you know, to some extent, like, I just want to have a video game to play. And, you know, League is, I have massive, massive problems with it, but it's good enough that I feel like I can play it. And that's kind of like the bar. I just feel like in the second half of my lifetime of video games, I just learned so little. You know, from Warcraft 3, I didn't really learn that much that I wasn't taught from StarCraft. From TF2, I didn't really learn that much that I wasn't taught from Doom. Now, board games are an exception. I wish I'd done more of board games earlier. But so many of the video game experiences in terms of learning and learning about what video games are and just, you know, general learning, it's not that much. League, I guess there is something there that is a little more different. But, you know, Counter-Strike and all these other FPSs and all these other RTSs, there's just not that much to learn there if you've played games of that genre. And I think that's a big reason why I can't really play Overwatch now. It's like, I get it. I totally, totally, totally get it to the point where I don't need to play it. I know how this goes completely. And that's not true for League. Actually, it's funny. I've been playing League now for almost 3 years. And I'm now just starting to get to the point where I am starting to, like, get League. And as that, I think that also might be informing part of this too, which is like, I kind of get League, and I'm now reaching a point where I could see myself being like, all right, I'm not going to play it anymore. But if I don't play that, I'm like, I don't play any video games. I really, for the last few years, I don't play. I can't. It's so hard for me to motivate myself to try out like these new like indie games or new board games, things that typically are the most promising things. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I guess one way to put it is like the games that are really promising in concept, again, board games, indie games, usually don't have the funding and the backup, the support to actually become great and something that you could play for like years, as I've played League, something that you could form like this monogamous game relationship with. Indie games just don't have the muscle to do that. Now, I personally think that Oro is kind of an exception to that, but that took us 6 years to make. No one does that. Very few people do that. I think there's a couple other developers out there who do that, but it's very rare. So the rarity of that makes it hard for me to motivate myself to want to try new games. And I do. I mean, I have one. I'm going to be trying a new game later today. But I don't play iPhone games. I don't play PC games. I don't run Steam. You know, I don't even play board games anymore. I pretty much play League. And then once in a while, I'll play Tropic Euro, which, by the way, I've been playing that thing forever, which is Puerto Rico, a digital version of Puerto Rico. Highly recommend it. But sometimes I'll play that, but that's pretty much it. And actually, I wish that it's like 1 to 2 games of League per day on average. And I kind of wish that that my habits were that all along, you know, spending maybe 1 hour a day playing games. That's acceptable to me. But it used to be, you know, 5-6 hours a day at least. And I really regret how much time I've spent playing video games. There's just so many other things that I could right now know so much more about. Just other disciplines, things about world history, languages, you know, just being like more proficient in programming or anything, any other discipline would be preferable to me than being this like video game expert. Because if I was like a third the video game expert I am, it would be like plenty. I would totally be able, even if I want to do like game design, I just don't think it's, it doesn't help me after a certain point. So that's how I'm feeling. Maybe that's wrong. You know, maybe I needed to play like a billion hours of video games to kind of come to some of the conclusions I have come to about, you know, about video games being basically boring. Maybe I would, you know, maybe that would change my perception. So who knows? But I'm just sort of spitballing this idea. Another thing about video games, and I've been kind of getting more into the worlds of politics and political science and law and stuff, and I feel like, and I don't know if this is just like ignorance on these other fields, but I feel like I would associate so much better with people in those arenas. Sometimes in the video game world, it's very isolating. You know, like if you are in the video game world and you're at this like video game convention and you just don't like anything and you don't like the classics, like, you know, Legend of Zelda and Mario and Final Fantasy and, you know, anything. And not only that, but like you find a lot of it like loathsome and like horrible. It's just very isolating. I think one reason for that is that there aren't video games are kind of monolithic. They're becoming a little less so in the last few years. But like, you know, in politics, for example, I can find a group, a pretty big group of people who like share 70 to 90% of my political views. With video games, I've met maybe 5 people in my life who have my views on video games in the video game world. Now, that's the thing. When I leave the video game world, when I talk to people from outside of video games about video games, they totally agree with me. They have no problems with my views on video games for the most part. Now, some of that might be coming out of ignorance rather than out of like they've explored the depths of video games and come to this conclusion. But I think actually some of it is like the badness of video games, both in terms of their interactive merit and in terms of their moral and political messaging, is just bad. And those of us in the video game world have just been blinded to something that's very obvious, whereas people who are not in that world don't have that blinding effect. And so they can see the obvious thing. So anyway, being in the video game world for me is very isolating and very, I don't know. I when I look at other fields, I feel like I would just be able to be a part of something rather than just be this like one rogue person yelling at a cloud, you know? And you know, there's other things about video game culture, sort of stylistic things that I've just never been attached to. And of course, video games are so huge that like all kinds of people, like video games and are a part of the video game world, but there are some dominant memes that I just don't, identify with. You know, like the whole geek culture thing, geekness, I don't understand that at all. I guess maybe because I'm not a geek at all, or I don't know, like I'm not sure how. From my sense of that word, I don't really identify with it. And, you know, I think a lot of people in video games are, you know, a lot of people that play video games intensely are kind of maybe not super extroverted. They are maybe more bookish, maybe more, you know, like academic and a lot of like programmery types and that kind of thing. And I guess I like all that stuff, but I don't identify with it as much as and I think that's another issue that I've run into many times in the video game world is a lot of the people in this world are they come from like hard sciences. They don't come from like humanities backgrounds. They don't come from the arts backgrounds, and I do come from like an arts background. And so things like, you know, for me, When I come up with a guideline for better whatever design, to me it's not at all problematic that there's exceptions and that I haven't proven it or whatever. But to a lot of people in the video game world, that is a problem, especially developers and people who take it really seriously. I don't know if I'm being a little bit scatterbrained here, but I regret how much time I've spent with video games. I wish I had done more, I don't know, reading, taken school more seriously, that kind of thing in general. And, you know, it's obviously it's not too late, and I am making changes in my life to accommodate that. And I'm also still, you know, doing games. I love making games, and I still believe in the prospect, the possibility of a good game. I am struggling with the idea of, like, man, what if I just stopped playing video games, like, right now? How would that, like, help me, and how would that hurt me? And it's very obvious how it would help me. I would just have a couple of extra hours a day to do whatever I need to do. Caveat there, I may not, because maybe it's like, if I don't do that, I have to just like watch TV, or I have to like waste time in some other way, just like reading random internet stuff. But that's the thing, even like watching TV or even random internet stuff is like more enriching to me probably than playing my 500th League of Legends game. You know what I mean? Or than playing some new video game, which almost certainly, not certainly, but almost certainly is going to be like, oh, okay, this, you know? So yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a game developer. I'm pretty embedded in that. That's not changing anytime soon. And I like making games. I mean, I like making games a lot more than I like playing them. Partially because, you know, you get to imagine, even if the game you're not making is good, you get to imagine a good game while you're making one. And that's hard to do when you're playing a game and it's not, and it's like actively bad in your face. So anyway, a lot of this is just sort of thought experimenty, kind of playing with these ideas, and not necessarily something I'm going to take action on. I'm making more games than I ever before, actually. I'm like, in a way, more serious about game development than I've ever been. I'm going to conventions. I'm going to Project Horseshoe soon, next week, actually. And I'm, you know, I don't have any direct plans to quit playing video games. I just, the idea of it is very compelling to me because of how it has felt like such a huge, like, drain and to some extent on my life. And I feel like it's something that, you know, should be considered is all. And so I'm considering that kind of stuff. And I don't know if this is at all useful for other people. I hope it is. And if not, maybe it's just entertaining. But please let me know what you thought of this episode. And thank you for listening. And I will be back again in a few weeks. All right, take care.
This podcast is made possible by the patrons at patreon.com. To support the show, visit patreon.com/KeithBurgun.